Welcome into K-State Online. I am Mason Voth. That is Drew Galloway. And it is Tuesday, which means we are getting closer to K-State basketball. Oklahoma State coming to town tomorrow. Get ready for that as the Cats will try to avenge their loss in Stillwater. That really still doesn't feel good. I mean, that Oklahoma State is still not a good basketball team. Well, obviously, K-State isn't either, but...
Apparently, I just blocked it out of my memory because I completely forgot about it really until I started doing more digging on the game.
Well, you know, the last like 10 minutes of the game, you didn't even really need to watch because it was decided by that point. But yeah, I mean, I can't remember a ton of things from that game other than, I mean, did Buddy Rich play a lot in that game and then never again basically the rest of the year? What was that situation like?
I think he played like 10 minutes maybe, and then we haven't seen him since.
All right, well, who knows, probably won't see him again tomorrow, but you really never know with this team. On today's show, what we're going to talk about, not only is it Tuesday and we're getting closer to Wednesday where K-State will play basketball, but we are also getting very close to the final day of the month of January, which is significant this time of year because the last 2 years, right around this time is when the Big 12 has announced their football schedule for the upcoming season. So last year, I'm not doing the fact-checking on this. I know it was around this time, and I'm taking Scott Wildcat's word. Yeah, he said January 30th. I'm believing it because the year prior to that, it was January 31st on the day of the K-State-KU game in Lawrence. So this time has been when we've gotten that schedule, as I know people are patiently waiting for it. I am somebody that is patiently waiting for it now because I have a friend that's decided to have a wedding on October 25th. So they better be crossing their fingers that it's a bye week, which good year to be hoping that it's a bye week because K-State's going to get an extra one than everybody else. So
yes, great year to have a fall wedding if you're having a fall wedding potentially.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Potentially. Yeah. That could also just be like the KU game and sorry, you know, friendship is great, but the Sunflower Showdown streak's a lot greater.
Get married the Sunday leading up to the bye week. Like I just do that.
Yeah. Sunday weddings underrated. I would throw that out there. I did not have a Sunday wedding. Some might say you broke your own rules. You got married on the Saturday of the Big 12 championship. Little different though. I got married in 2020 and the Big 12 title game was supposed to be the week prior. And then this little thing called COVID screwed it up. Also K-State wasn't playing in it. So not on me there. The only K-State home football game that I've missed since going back to 2016, actually it would go back a little further than that, but going back to 2016, my freshman year of college, I've only missed two. One of them was in 2021. For a fall wedding, K-State, Oklahoma. And then the other one, 2020, I unfortunately did miss the KU game because I decided to go accept a free ticket to the World Series in Texas instead. But, it takes a lot for me to miss something like that. We'll see how it goes. So if anybody's planning fall weddings or possibly attending them, hopefully that schedule is coming. But what it got me thinking about, Drew, was that we are getting close to the unofficial start of year number two with the current version of the Big 12, where you have the four Pac-12 schools in the league now, BYU also a part of it. And yes, UCF, Cincinnati, they are in this thing. Houston, not really worried about them because I want to talk about the start times of these games and how we're about to enter a second year of it. And K-State experienced a little bit of it last basketball season. That game at BYU tipped off like at 9 o'clock, I think. Maybe it was 10. That might have been 10 last year that one tipped off at.
It was late, but it was at least on a Saturday.
Yeah. And then obviously football season, we talked a lot of night games for K-State, two of which took place in Mountain Time, K-State and Boulder, K-State and Provo. Both of those, by the time they were delayed and everything, started roughly around 9:30 Central Time, and we've come to realize that's a significant disadvantage in most cases for these teams. You get that really late kick on the road. I think night games on the road are already tough enough for teams, but then when you factor in, hey, this is a whole hour later, and it's not the start of the game that is as big of a deal, but you think about your body, even if you're in that moment, especially in a sport like football where there is – a lot of downtime for the guys on the sideline where your unit's not on the field. You're sitting there looking at something like you're probably letting some yawns out when it gets to 12:45, 1 in the morning, where you're normally at. And so it seems like it poses a disadvantage, and obviously fans hate it. K-State basketball is getting ready to experience their late tips that they will see this season. Next week, I believe, when they go to Arizona State, that is a 9 o'clock tip for the Cats. Also coming up on the schedule for them, they'll have a 10 o'clock start on a weekday when they face BYU on February 7th, or not BYU, Utah, on February 17th. Then after that, they won't have any that are after too late. But they got a 9 and a 10 that you'll have to sit through on weeknights this year if you're a K-State fan. And I was talking with a couple of my former colleagues at a place we won't name. But if you want the worst takes in college football and the recruiting space, this would be the site that you would maybe go to. I'm not naming names. Names have not been named. We were talking yesterday because Alec, covering Iowa State, was down in Arizona all weekend. He was in Tempe on Saturday.
You really just kind of ruined who you were talking with right there.
I could have worked with these guys anywhere. Yeah, you know. Who used to say where? But he was down there, Arizona State on Saturday for Iowa State, and then he was in Tucson last night, and it was a late start time for Arizona and Iowa State. I was asleep by the time Caleb Love had hit his crazy shot, but I did get to watch the highlights at 3:30 in the morning. More on that in a little bit. So we're talking about it, and he sends a screenshot of something somebody posted on his board complaining about the late start time. And he is somebody that is a Pac-12 sympathizer for whatever reason. And then, obviously, the other unnamed colleague, he went to Arizona State. So he's obviously got the Pac-12 spin on it. And they are basically both strumming the line of, hey, you can't complain as a Big 12 fan about these late start times when you were championing the death of the Pac-12 and all this. And my point of view on it was, it wasn't championing the death of the Pac-12. Maybe it was a little bit at the end because George Kliavkov was such a stuck-up loser in that process. But it was more so celebrating the survival of the Big 12 and that the Big 12 pulled through on this, because obviously the SEC didn't care about anybody. And then the other three power conferences, when this was all going down, decided to do their cute, stupid little alliance thing that did not include the Big 12. So if you're telling me that, no, they didn't try leaving you for dead, even though that thing was bogus and didn't mean anything, the Big 12 could have been involved in it. Like, it ended up not turning into anything. Big 12 could have been involved. It wasn't. And there was a lot of big talk from wherever. And you look at it now, K-State and the Big 12 have come out on this where, if you're K-State, Iowa State, KU, Baylor, whoever, the Big 12 looks like the third best conference behind the SEC and the Big 10. Financially, it's close between the ACC and the Big 12, but then you look at the competitive side of it. The Big 12 is, I think, a much better product than football, and we know it is, even in a down Big 12, is worlds ahead of where the ACC is in basketball right now. And I said, I think you can complain about it because there is a little bit of a disadvantage to it, and you can find ways to get these games to maybe start a little bit earlier, especially with, you know, your ESPN Plus situation, because that's the thing. You look at some of these, the game with Arizona State, it starts at 9 o'clock. That's on ESPN Plus. What are we doing starting the game that late? You know, like, it could start at a normal time for everybody. And then football, all that. And I laid it out like this. I said, I love my daughter. She's great. I would not want to, you know, send her back or do whatever. But I am going to have moments where I've got complaints about her, like when it takes forever to get her to go down to bed, and then she decides, I'm just going to be awake at 2:30 a.m. And then I'm awake for another hour with her. And then she wakes up at 6:15 in the morning. It's like, oh, cool. Dad got 4.5 hours of sleep last night. Don't check the math on that. It's probably more than that than I got. The irony of that is that last night, as the previously named but now censored former colleague of mine was driving back to Phoenix from Tucson, And I just went and followed up to my text about that. And I said, I really screwed myself here because I am awake right now tending to my daughter. And he was still awake driving back and everything. But it got me thinking about what there could be solution-wise. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. But how do you feel about the late kicks and the late tips? Because when K-State isn't playing, you know, the team that I cover and the team that I care about is not playing, I actually love it for the Big 12. It's fun to be able to have another wave of viewing for the Big 12. It's not enjoyable, though, when you have any personal skin in the game.
Yeah, I think that that's kind of where I am. And like we talked before we started recording, just about this in general, I'm more okay with the late starts if it's a weekend. But like playing a 10 p.m. Central Time game on a Monday at Utah just seems really unnecessary more than anything else. When if you wanted to have that game on TV so bad, you could have started it at like 9 or 8 Central. But instead, like that game also being an ESPNU game, when K-State goes to Utah, it's like I would rather have that be on ESPN Plus and just make that just an 8 p.m. game or something. Because like that, there's just no reason for that game to start so late. And then the weekend, like I'm cool with that because like that, I'm usually up pretty late on the weekends anyway. Like it's fun to just flip on just a random Big 12 game that starts super late. But the weeknight ones, I don't really understand. But there's a few things that I don't really understand what the Big 12 is really doing. One of them being the Sunday Big 12 basketball games and how those games are never on TV and they're always on ESPN Plus. But when you go back to when the basketball season or the basketball schedule started, the main thing that you really heard was, oh yeah, they're doing these Sunday games because it's going to be like on TV and be one of the only power conference games on a Sunday.
That's what I thought it would be. You know, like the ACC used to do that. Some of the smaller leagues, the AAC, the Missouri Valley, they would do that to get TV viewers. And I don't know off the top of my head, but most of these Sunday games, number one, I haven't wanted to watch them. You know, Texas Tech, Oklahoma State was on Sunday. I'll be watching football. That's fine. And then, yeah, most of them have been on ESPN Plus. What is the point of this?
No, so that bothers me more than the late starts. The late starts on a weeknight, not ideal. Like I made it through the end of Arizona and Iowa State last night, but like it's more of like thinking about for us what that's gonna really look like for the Utah game. You are a real one if you are on our live instant reaction after the Utah basketball game.
After a 15-point loss at Utah, it's 12:30 in the morning, and we're live after the game. Well, and here's what it makes me think about is you think about everything that the athletes have to do and what just like good wisdom would be from whether it's a coach or a parent. In theory, you would probably be suggesting to these people like, hey, you should probably be in bed by 10 o'clock when you don't have like a game that night or something. You know, try and get squeeze in as much sleep as you can. K-State is going to be tipping off when it's 10 o'clock for their bodies in Salt Lake City. Like, I mean, they'd be yawning layup lines, I'm sure. And then football, we discussed, like, we saw what that was like. And we already know that football is such a strange deal with the waiting around in the hotel room. Like, the routine is such a big part of it. They get out there so early and everything. I have a suggestion for how we can fix this in football. Basketball, we might need to kick, you know, some other options around. But what if in football this season and moving forward, you did a mandatory, because if you're going to make these teams that have to go west play the late kickoffs, which again, you have to because the TV partners are going to have inventory that they need to fill, like
Cincinnati played at what would be a 10:30 p.m. their body time kick earlier this year when they played Colorado.
Yeah, and so here's what my suggestion is that anytime a team from the West, so anybody in Mountain Time goes east, whether you're playing in Central or Eastern Time, that football game has to kick off at 11 a.m. So you can bake in somewhat of an advantage. Although I still think if you had the choice to play at 10 a.m. or 9:30 at night, most of these teams would probably pick 10 a.m. I know K-State would. I mean, Chris Klieman probably would start that thing at 9 a.m. if he could. That guy loves early kicks. But I think you got to bake in that advantage a little bit to where it plays out. So, like, this season for K-State, they're going to go to Utah. That, to me, seems like when the schedule comes out, depending on when it ends, like, we'll probably get there in the middle of the season. That feels like it'll be a 9 o'clock, 9:30 game on Fox or something.
Yeah.
Or ESPN, one of those prime opportunities. And, for example, the Colorado game. When Colorado comes to Manhattan this year, make that an 11 a.m. kickoff. Get that thing, which, who knows, it could be big noon. Would probably be in play at that point because Deion's involved. But make that be an 11 a.m. kick so you can give these teams, again, people are probably thinking you're stupid, that it's not that big of a deal. It probably isn't, but there is an advantage to the teams that are getting to start this late at home where they're used to it a little bit more, as opposed to the teams that they're not accustomed to it and have to go. You need to bake that in the other way, where you need to give that tiny advantage occasionally to the other teams in the, you know, in the league and everything. So that would be my suggestion, is that when a team like that comes east, you need to kick off at 11 a.m. Central, or, you know, do it 11 Eastern, 12 Eastern, I guess, because the TV windows don't really like to move up to 11 Eastern. But please go ahead and do that. That'd be my solution for it in football. Basketball, we're probably just going to have to suck up the late tip-offs every once in a while. It's not the worst thing in the world, but it could be better.
No, I don't think that that's a terrible idea. I mean, what was actually really dumb but ended up working out well for K-State was you have the after dark kick against BYU, and then K-State came home the next week to play Oklahoma State, and they made that game at 11.
Yeah.
That I think is probably worse. And I know that you had the bye week in between, but could you imagine if K-State would have gone from the late night kick to an 11 a.m. kick against Oklahoma State, and then they played that next week at Colorado, and there was another late night one? It's like, there are times where, like, yes, the TV partners want that game and want that game to be put at a certain time, but I think that you also have to have some common sense a little bit. Like, if a team played at 9:15, 9:30 the previous week, you probably shouldn't put them at 11 a.m. the next week. It's not a huge deal in the grand scheme of things, but it's just something that is just like, if you can avoid it, why would you want them to really go through it?
Well, and then think about if you look around, like, the rest of kind of sports this year and the other ways that conferences have realigned. Do you remember back during football season when, and there's a Kentucky basketball way, this is what brought it to my thought, but then this came in as well. Kentucky played in Austin this year. It was the farthest west that Kentucky had ever played a football game in their school's history. That is insane to think about. And again, that's, you know, cool. You know, you probably had to travel a little bit, but I don't think Lexington to Austin is that strenuous of a flight. And you were only, you know, the time difference is not that crazy. And that game probably kicked off at like 11 a.m. or something. So I think that's where you also have to take into consideration here is now the Big Ten and the ACC, they're having to fight this as well as the Big 12 because you're such a coast-to-coast conference now. But some of these other leagues are going to have some advantages to that and give certain teams something that's afforded to them. That's just, again, it's a little advantage. It's not a big one, but I think it's something to think about moving forward is when you tip and kick games off, and just to keep your fans happy too. You know, they toss some things out there, give them some bones. Multiple late starts for K-State last year, just, it was brutal in football.
Oh yeah. I'll also add this, and it's kind of just talking about just travel times, just everything in general with having these massive conferences now. The one thing that I think the Big 12 has done pretty well is if you do have a road game and it's Arizona and Arizona State, they make them in a back-to-back, mm-hmm. and then they do the same with BYU and Utah for these Central and Eastern teams. Because I think that's just what you have to do.
Unless you're BYU, and then you tell the Big 12, thanks for your kindful consideration, but no thanks. We got to fly back so our player can go see his baby. And then that was the wildest string last year where we found out that they were in Kansas, and then they were going to fly back to Utah and then fly back to Kansas for their Tuesday game against KU. And it's like, you're just signing yourself up. And then they won. That was the, I guess they built up some good karma for going back to see, what was his name? Was it Billy? What was the baby's name?
Oh,
I can't remember. It was the,
I can't remember the baby.
The Johnson guy's kid that was born.
Yes. And it's Spencer Johnson's child. Yeah.
So I just remember Mark Pope afterwards saying that. I was like, did I hear that right? They're flying back to Utah. Joey was the kid's name. It was Joey Johnson. Little Joey Johnson is what Mark Pope had said. And then they won in Allen Fieldhouse. So I tell you what, this is my suggestion for Jerome Tang next year. Just take a little day trip with the boys to Salt Lake City and then fly back the day before you go to Lawrence and see if some of that magic can just sprinkle onto yourself. But that was that was crazy to think about last year. But yes, it's good that they do that. And it's in a similar vein to the travel partners thing that the Pac-12 used to do where, you know, Arizona State, they would flip-flop what days they played them, but they'd go to both of the Oregon schools or both of the Washington schools and play, or, you know, both the LA, and how that's worked out. And we see that with the schedule this year for a lot of these teams, for the most part. I mean, it's when they can.
We're getting that more in actually the women's game, mm-hmm. from what I have really kind of gathered, because, you know, 2 weeks ago now, Arizona played K-State in the women's on Thursday and then went to Lawrence on Sunday, and then Arizona State was flip-flopped with Arizona. So I think that we're getting there. It's just the late tips and late kicks are just going to be something that I think that we have to deal with now.
And the week prior to that, K-State did it up in Utah with Utah, yes. and BYU, and then the men's team will get to do that, and the KU men will be up there at the same time. I would be interested, though, because I don't know that, like, what is the actual advantage to doing that? Because I don't think the K-State and KU men are just going to hop on the same plane together. I don't think that's something that's going to go down. So, like, what is – I would love to know what the actual benefit is to it if you're not, you know, traveling together. But it may just be to keep, you know, somewhat of a weird tradition or thing alive. So, I haven't dug into that. I don't know why it's a thing. If someone can explain it to me.
Now that you bring it up, I hope that we get a picture of K-State and KU both traveling together.
Yeah, that would be funny. And nobody knows that. They just show up to the airport and, you on this flight? Yeah. Oh, wow, I thought we were on it. Well, we're on it together. And now Coleman Hawkins and Hunter Dickinson are sitting in 1A together. Two massive humans having to share seats right next to each other would be pretty funny. I'm with you. We just have to deal with it and suck it up. But it is one of those, like, I got thinking about. Was that a big boom?
We got a big boom right outside the door here.
Oh, okay,
we're fine. We're good.
I was wondering, do you need to take shelter? What's going on? But I do think we deal with it. We suck it up. But I do think there need to be some things that we look at and consider. Basketball is tough, like you said, there are so many games that it's not like one can totally wreck everything. And again, like I talked about in football, there's a lot of downtime in between when you'll be on the field, a lot more constant action basketball wise. So I'm not as worried about it there, but in football, you go on the road in that sport, and in the Big 12, you can look at it in a couple of different ways. Over 10% of your conference season is going to take place in that one game. It becomes important. So then you think about K-State, and, you know, 22% of your games last year ended up taking place in those late kicks. You want to try and be able to get your advantage whenever you can, because this feels like the kind of thing that Bill Snyder would be really pissed off about. Somebody, and we know a lot of football coaches are so detail orientated that they would start to go, well, we're losing this, this, and this by having to play this late, and they're gaining this because they're used to it, and then they never have to come out here to play early. So that's just my one little suggestion is let's make some of these teams play a couple 11 a.m. games and get it sorted out. You don't have to do all of them because I know then that makes it unfair to Utah, who's starting every game at 10 a.m. when they come out this way. But give them one or two, and maybe teams like K-State or Iowa State or Cincinnati, they'll hit the lottery and they'll get that early game, which Cincinnati did this year, by the way,
yes,
which I would point out. Now, in the nature of being fair and transparent, Arizona State started Jeff Sims in this game, not Sam Levitt. But Arizona State, the Big 12 champs that almost took Texas down in overtime, they're one of their two losses in Big 12 play. They lost by a touchdown at Texas Tech, their very first Big 12 game ever. And then their only other loss that they had until the playoff quarterfinal ended up coming against Cincinnati on the road in a game that kicked off at 11 a.m. So they did have to go out there and do their early kick time. And they ended up losing that game. Now, again, Sam Levitt did not play, but just throwing that out there on how it ended up going down for him. But that's what we got going there. I will tell you this, Drew. One Big 12 game that we already know the start time of, and it will be friendly to the viewers at home. I don't know if you do travel over there or you're playing in the game, you might have some complaints about how your body feels with the travel and everything that goes into it. But K-State and Iowa State, they will be playing in the Aer Lingus College Football Classic on August 23rd. And if you want to go over there, you know to go to cats2ireland.com because that would be your chance to cheer on the Cats as they take on their Big 12 rival on international turf and make history. And going to cats2ireland.com for more info, this is going to give you all the official travel, hospitality, and airfare packages. And that sets you up, takes care of everything for you. The only thing you need to worry about is getting your passport, which this guy already did, so not to brag. And then you just got to find your way to the airport one time. Twice if you need to find your way back home, but that's not as important. You get over there, you watch the Cats, who cares what happens after that. You may not want to come back if they lose the game also, so that's something to take into consideration.
Well, you also might not want to come back if they win.
True. You might just suggest, hey, can we play the whole season over here? That might give us an advantage when BYU or Colorado comes to town. Something
I bet Northwestern thought that in 2021.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Northwestern would have loved to have played all their games over there. Nebraska, on the other hand, probably never again. Now, if you're the type of person that says, I'm my own travel agent, thanks for the suggestion, then this line is for you because you can get your single game tickets for the Aer Lingus College Football Classic. Now available exclusively to Ahern Fund members. Act fast as this pre-sale window is open through 5 p.m. on Thursday, January 30th. So we got a little over 2 days left until that comes. And then the remaining tickets will go on sale online only to the public starting at 5 p.m. Monday, February 3rd through the K-State Athletics ticket office. And then phone and in-person orders will be available starting at 8:30 a.m. the following day, Tuesday, February 4th. So visit kstatesports.com. to learn more. Ireland fun fact, Drew, what do we got on Tuesday, January 28th? I'm keeping track of all these. I will recite every one of them back to you on the flight over to Ireland.
Oh God. Great. Glad that I have that to look forward to on the flight there. You should actually do that on the flight back. That would be funny.
Well, maybe I'll have a few of my own new ones by the time we're flying back. So we'll keep that into consideration.
All right, so one of the oldest lighthouses in the world is located in Wexford, Ireland. It's the Hook Lighthouse. It's on the tip of Hook Head in the city of Wexford, which is in South Ireland. It dates all the way back to 1172 and is still in use. It's been working automatically since 1996. It's one of Ireland's favorite attractions. And it says that from the balcony that you have a spectacular view of the ocean.
So I don't know the answer to this. I know that there's a way for it to be done. I'm not saying that it's impossible or I'm not calling anybody a liar. Do you have any idea how lighthouses would have worked before electricity or like modern technology in any way?
I don't know how lighthouses work now.
So also, no. I mean, you think about it, 1996, there was a long period there where people were probably like, I think we could automate this thing. And they were still like, nah, can't do it. Can't do it. It's just like when I got to working at the radio station in Manhattan, and you start to do all these things and then realize what is automated. And you knew at some point, like, somebody had to be in the radio stations all the time. That had to be a constant thing. But you don't really think about it until something goes wrong. And then you start to go, this job would have freaking sucked if we didn't have all this stuff. Like, I probably would not have ever worked at K-Man in the 1980s. It would have just been miserable to be there. And you're like, oh, yeah, I got to go in at 11:30 because K-State's kicking off a football game at midnight with Hawaii or something. I got to run the game manually. I had to do that once for K-State volleyball, where they started a match at midnight with Hawaii to begin their season. I was fired up, and I had already been in there. This was, keep in mind, this was 2018, I believe. So most things were already automated. For some reason, Kansas City Chiefs broadcasts were not yet. So, like, the Royals came in, nobody had to be there. K-State basketball and football came in, nobody had to be there. But for some reason, the Chiefs were not. And so I had to be there in the middle of the day for a Chiefs preseason game. And then, since I was like the only one in town, because it was still the summer, classes hadn't started yet, I had to come back at midnight for K-State and Hawaii volleyball. And I was ticked, because it's not like those teams were very good under Susie Fritz. So it's like, oh, I'm coming in here to run a loss. That'll be fun. You know, and I only got a couple of words before I got going to Rob Velker, the former voice of K-State volleyball. I was like, okay, that's my human interaction for the next 3 hours while I'm here. That really fired me up. Then there was a hurricane that was maybe going to impact down there or something. And so I was kind of hoping that it would prevent K-State from playing that game. It did not. I was there. But it got me thinking, man, who would have wanted this job when things were done manually all the time? So that's what your lighthouse thing made me think about. I looked it up. Before electricity, lighthouses used a variety of fuels. I assumed they had something like that. But a clockwork mechanism to rotate lenses and create flashing signals. So that makes sense. That somebody that was smart, they were like, oh, hey, if we do this, it flickers and flashes and gets people's attention. So I guess that's how lighthouses worked back in the day.
It's 853 years old.
Wow. Probably time to retire, lighthouse. Hang them up.
Hang them up.
All right. K-State, Oklahoma State basketball tomorrow night, 7 o'clock tip. So while it could be better, it could be 6 o'clock, which I dearly love. It will not be. It'll be 7 o'clock. Not bad. CBS Sports Network, which, just as an aside, we can talk about this real quick while we complain about all the things that don't really matter in sports, but we, you know, are interested in them. CBS Sports Network continues to be the gift that keeps on giving, I think, to a lot of people in the Big 12 that they're finding out, where they like the production quality. They love the fact that, hey, the announcers are always on location. There is typically a panel of 3 or 4 in the studio that before, during, and after, they are actually talking about your game, the stuff that actually matters to the two teams involved. What have your thoughts been on CBS Sports becoming a regular TV partner for the Big 12?
No, I love CBS Sports Network. Before they had the Big 12, I used to watch a lot of Mountain West and just sicko games on CBS Sports Network. So it's fun to have the Big 12 be there. I know that before the game Saturday, we talked about how, like, we like how they open with the stand-up that CBS games do, and we wish that more channels and more stations would do that. But when half the time you don't get announcers that are on site, or you do and they just don't do that, or the production quality is just bad, it is like having CBS games all the time.
Like, yeah,
that is how CBS Sports Network operates. My one complaint, and KSU_fan is right there with me, I imagine that you are too, the only downside to CBS Sports Network is that just like every other TV partner, they don't bake in enough time in between games. So there's a lot of times where you're not starting on time, and they don't have an app that you can go watch it on like TV.
Yeah, that is true. That it can get a little dicey. Actually, I think the CBS Sports app does, you can do it. It's just, it's not always clear, because I did it for the TCU game, but it wasn't like, you went to one, you're like, this should be it, and then it wasn't, and then you eventually found it, but then it was like a little too late, so you didn't see tip off. But it is a little complicated, and I know, like, I knew this was a blind spot for CBS, even when they have like their main products, because PGA Tour inevitably will have some events that they need to move times up, and so they can't blow out like Sunday morning programming on CBS for you know, like the Quicken Loans Invitational or whatever. I guess it's the Rocket Mortgage now up there in Detroit. But like the one that Ricky Fowler ended up winning a couple of years ago, that they had to move everything up to the morning. And so CBS wasn't going to show it until it was on tape delay later in the day in their normal 2 o'clock window. So you had to go find it on CBSSports.com or their app. And it was a little tricky and weird to go find. So I will agree with that. But obviously ESPN had issues with that last night, because I know people were like, no, the Arizona-Iowa State game is not on ESPNU right now. Where is this? Where is this game going?
That is literally the only benefit to ESPN Plus now, is that you know that the games are going to start on time.
Yeah.
Well, 98% of the time, because there's still times where they don't.
Yeah, or you're scrolling for like, where is this thing? Where is this thing? The best friend, if you're in that situation on ESPN Plus, always go to the Big 12 tab on there, scroll down and just find it, and that makes your life a lot easier. In terms of this Big 12 game that we're about to witness tomorrow night, K-State, probably their second most embarrassing game of the year behind the loss to Wichita State, happened in Stillwater a couple of weeks ago. And since that point, you know, Jerome Tang made comments about guys not playing like they were worthy of wearing a K-State uniform, stuff along those lines. For the most part, the effort that we've seen out of K-State has been better. They've played like an improved team, certainly over the last three, and really the last four results have been encouraging. Now you get Oklahoma State, where I think this is, to me, a game where if everything is starting to trend in a better direction, I want to see K-State come out and win this thing, put together another double-digit win on Wednesday night, because you should be able to do it against Oklahoma State based on the way you're playing now.
Yeah, I would even go as far to say as that these teams are going in opposite directions. I know that the results haven't been where K-State has wanted them to go, but since they played that game, Oklahoma State has been pretty terrible. They lost by 21 at Utah, lost by 16 at BYU, lost by 14 at home to Arizona, and then lost by 10 to Texas Tech. So the losses, they've all lost games by double digits. They did have a win against Colorado, who we've said is the worst team in the Big 12 right now. But I would venture to say that these teams are going in opposite directions, and I would be a little bit disappointed if K-State didn't win this game by double digits. Like, if K-State has really turned the corner, and they seem like they have, this is a game that you got to win by 10 plus.
Yeah, Oklahoma State 10-9 on the season. They only have one game in those nine losses that's been decided by less than 10 points, and it was when they lost by 8 to Florida Atlantic in their fourth game of the season. That was their first loss. But everything since then, 12 to Nevada, 15 to Oklahoma, 13 to Houston, 19 to West Virginia, 21 to Utah, like you mentioned, 16 to BYU, 14 to Arizona, and 10 to Texas Tech. So yeah, I'm right there with you. I think this is one where you should have the motivation of essentially some payback here. You want to get back one of those embarrassing losses. And the team that we saw play against West Virginia, and really the team that we saw for the most part in Waco and Kansas, that type of team should win by double digits at home against Oklahoma State and have it happen pretty easy. But we know that this is – go ahead.
I would venture to say even the team that played against Texas Tech for the most part, yeah, beats Oklahoma State by double digits.
So we've talked about what this season means looking forward and beyond this. What specifically, either player-wise or team-wise, do you want to see in this game against Oklahoma State now that you're coming off the big win against West Virginia that kind of continues the thought process that I think most of us are having or trying to have that this team is moving in the right direction? What do you need to see against O State that makes you think along those lines?
So I have two things. I need to see Doug McDaniel continue to take steps. Like, we're getting really close to, I think, what we anticipated seeing from Doug McDaniel all season long. He's had two really good first halves in a row with bad second halves, but then had a bad first half and Lawrence had a good second half in Lawrence. So I think that we're getting really close to seeing a full game from Doug McDaniel, and that's something I want to see, because I'm not so far gone with how he has played in the last 2 weeks that he isn't somebody that I'd want to bring back. And then this is just a matchup that Yugan Onyenso has to play and play well in. Because if you look at what happened in the first meeting, Oklahoma State dominated in the paint. And a large part was Osmane from Oklahoma State, who had a season high of 27. So, like, this is a game for him that he needs to play well in, because I think that the first time when he played against Oklahoma State, it was the first time that Ugo had played in, I think, 4 or 5 games. And you could really tell, because he looked really rusty and looked really slow. But we probably got the best version of Yugan Onyenso of the season on Saturday as well. I know that he didn't play the second half, but then that first half, he was active. He was getting rebounds. He was blocking shots. He had one of the funniest and ones in a basketball game I'd seen in a little bit. So you kind of are seeing the light starting to turn on for two guys that I think we weren't necessarily fully out on them in terms of returning next year. But we're kind of seeing that light turn on to where it's like, okay, I think that you can bring them both back and have them both be major contributors next season.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And you're right about Doug McDaniel. I mean, you look at the numbers last two games, it's been over 30 minutes in each game. And then the shooting, he's 50% from three in the game. Again, small sample size, but 2 of 5 against Baylor, 1 of 3 against West Virginia. That's kind of a breakdown that you would like to see. He had 6 assists against West Virginia, only 2 against Baylor, but he did some other things where I think it's looking a little bit better. Turnovers at 3, maybe a little high, but you can live with it for as much as he's going to touch the ball and some of the other things that he can do for you. It is starting to come together for him. And just the fact that he is able to get himself in a position where he can be out there that much is also a good thing. And we've seen for the most part in Big 12 play, he's played a lot. The only game that he really didn't in Big 12 play was against Texas Tech. So he's falling in that category. And then Ugo, I think he was a guy that you probably would have wanted to bring back anyways. But now you're starting to see some more things from him, at least on the offensive end. The defense, it's been a little disappointing this year that he hasn't necessarily brought as much as what you thought he could to the table. So I think that's something to wait and see. But he's going to get a great opportunity tomorrow night to kind of prove that the defense can be there like K-State wanted. But yeah, both of those guys, they're probably leading the department of, I don't know if you were wanted back or were going to come back anyways, but you're trending to making this a, hey, let's bring it back. Let's do this thing again. Because I think, you know, obviously David Castillo was already in that boat. Regardless, you want him back. Brendan Hazen, to me, is a guy, you want him back. I know there are the Hazen haters out there. You get no love from me. Do not come after my sniper like that.
And then you got 15 roster spots, and I think that you'd be kind of silly to not have Taj and Moby back if you're going to have 15 roster spots next year too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you've got a lot to work with there. So I think it's going to be that type of thing that you watch for with K-State. And really, momentum is such a big deal. We talked about it a little bit after K-State beat West Virginia, doing what you needed to do to win that game. This team, these players, the coaches, the fan base to some extent, they need wins. They need to have stuff that makes them feel good. And again, you're not going to end up in the NCAA tournament this season, but you can finish this thing on a strong note where the thoughts and feelings that people have about you will be drastically changed by the end of the season. So whether that's for the long-term thoughts that people have for you, is at play, but then also what good grace are you getting going into next season? Because I think that's a big part of it. Like, if you can finish this year strong enough, you can see as a fan that everybody has still bought in, they're trying, they want to try and win these games, then it's a little bit easier to accept that, hey, I think Jerome Tang and his staff can get this thing fixed. I think these players are good to come back. I think this player, you know, it didn't work out. It was a disappointing, underperforming season, but there's no ill will there. And then that can be a nice way to kind of springboard into next year, have some excitement and have some serious optimism that next year's team can be what a basketball team at K-State should be. And that's somebody that's in the NCAA tournament almost every year.
I'm ready to bring the fire and potentially get hurt here. With how K-State has looked the last 2 weeks, I know it sucks because of how the season has gone. And the season has definitely hasn't gone how we anticipated, or probably even the coaching staff, to be honest. There's no reason that K-State can't finish 10th in the Big 12. Like, look at who's in front of them. K-State's probably better than Utah. They should have beat TCU in Fort Worth. They've already beat Cincinnati. I think that they're probably better than Arizona State. If they win Wednesday, Oklahoma State's not going to be able to win enough games to catch them. And they're better than Colorado. They can finish 10th, and with how West Virginia has been, it wouldn't shock me if they catch West Virginia as well. Like, the K-State schedule we talked about before the season even began, like, we thought K-State could make a deep run and be in the Big 12 title hunt in the last few weeks because of how the schedule lines up. There's a chance that K-State could win 3 of the last 4 before they host KU on February 8th.
Yeah. Well, and so here's the thing. This is way big picture, probably not in the realm of a serious likelihood, but I think what you reset the goal to right now, if you're this K-State team, yes, obviously win every game. Like, that's a no duh type of deal. That's how sports work. You should go into every game thinking, hey, we can win. Like, this is what we're going to do. Our goal is to win. Even teams that know they have zero shot to win a game, that as a competitor, that should be your mindset. But what I think the goal should be for K-State right now is to look at it and say, we don't want to play on that first day of the Big 12 tournament. If we want to be realistic, because again, not really totally possible, I don't think, just because this is not how this stuff typically works. But if you want to try and convince yourself that you had all this talent before the season that people thought was going to be a good team, and you can put something together, and I know this would be the way that Jerome Tang would look at it, is when you show up to Kansas City the middle period of March, you are going to say, we win these games, we go to the NCAA tournament, we can still do what we wanted to do. It makes it a lot easier if you only have to win 4 games in 4 days, as opposed to have to win 5 in 5, and that path is a lot trickier. So I think the goal for this team now should be, we are trying to finish in, get to 8th in the Big 12, get that last single bye that you can get for the Big 12 tournament, so you're not playing on loser day this year, and then you can try and tell yourself, hey, we just got to win 4 games in a row when we get here. And again, are they going to win 4 in a row when they get to Kansas City? No, probably not. Very good chance that they don't do that. But that, to me, would be the way that I think you try and reset the goal for the season. It's very, let me indulge you on a great early 2000s, mid-2000s movie that I like to watch, baseball movie, Drew. It involves a famous comedian. He has died now. You know what movie I'm about to reference here?
Field of Dreams?
No. When do you think that movie came out? I said early to mid-2000s is when this came out.
To be honest with you, I didn't hear the mid-2000s portion.
Early mid-2000s, very funny guy, was the main character. He retires and then comes back because he needs to hit a statistical milestone to get into the Hall of Fame. And he comes back to play for a team that's not very good. This actor, comedian, he is now dead. Relative to dead people, somebody affiliated with the team that this actor in this movie played for, he just died recently. Do you have any idea what movie I'm talking about? Maybe you've never seen this classic.
I don't think that I've seen this one.
It's called Mr. 3000 with Bernie Mac. Oh,
yeah, have not seen this
okay,
movie.
Well, number one, tonight, movie night with your wife, you're watching Mr. 3000. I don't know what it's on, but go watch Mr. 3000. But I'm about to spoil the plot for you right now. it really doesn't matter. It's not like a great movie, but it's got some authentic baseball stuff to it. But essentially the idea is Bernie Mac is this great hitter. He plays for the Milwaukee Brewers. He retires with exactly 3,000 hits. And so he thinks he's hit this milestone to get into the Hall of Fame. And he retires before like the season is even ended or whatever. And so he bails out, whatever. As they're going through and looking at his numbers to, you know, send out and say, hey, do you want to vote for this guy for the Hall of Fame? They find some statistical errors where games that got started but didn't make it deep enough, so they didn't count. He had hits in those. They shouldn't count. So he's like three or four hits actually shy of reaching 3,000 hits and what he thinks he needs to get into the Hall of Fame. He's branded everything about himself as Mr. 3000. So he comes back as a washed up old ball player to the current day Milwaukee Brewers to try and get to this milestone here. This team has, this is not Major League where the team that really, really sucks all of a sudden is winning the division and is trying to win the pennant. No, he comes back and he is on a crappy team that is still playing crappy baseball, but he gets them to buy in that their goal should not be to finish in last place in the NL Central. It should be, don't you want to finish in? At the time, there were six teams in the NL Central, so I can't remember if it was just they even wanted to finish fifth, but I think the goal was to finish fourth in the NL Central. They weren't sitting there in August saying, hey, we're going to win our next 60 games and make the playoffs and go win the World Series. Like, that's not what I'm asking K-State to do. But I am asking Jerome Tang or Coleman Hawkins is a better example because he's the old guy on the roster that's been around for whatever. Mr. 3000, this thing, Coleman. Like, this team, the goal needs to be, even if it seems like a long shot to even get to that point, you want to try and finish an eighth and get to where you only have to win four games in 4 days, and maybe anything can happen from there. But it's good to still have goals even in a lost season. I think that makes guys play better. I think you get a better understanding of what a guy like Doug McDaniel is or some of these other guys you might want to keep. So Mr. 3000, this thing. And that would also – maybe the team needs to watch Mr. 3000. Maybe that could help turn the season around too. You know, I got the team to win against Cincinnati, allegedly. I'm trying to get them some more wins. Go watch Mr. 3000.
No, I think that's a good goal to have, is to at least just not play that first day of the Big 12 tournament. And I think that it's possible when you look at who's in front of them, because there's nobody in front of them in that, like, 14 to 8 range that I would say, like, they're significantly worse than. Like, K-State should have probably beat Baylor, who is an 8th. So anything is possible.
Yeah, anything is possible, Kevin Garnett. I don't know where you're going to find Mr. 3000. That's probably like you have to rent it on Amazon for like $5 or something. It's worth the money. It is. You want me to tell you some more about this movie?
No,
it came out in 2004.
That's got to be one where I just find it on MLB Network randomly.
It is on MLB Network randomly occasionally.
They love to throw in some movies every once in a while.
Brewster's Millions is always on there, which again, or the Naked Gun is on there occasionally because it has the one scene where Leslie Nielsen is an umpire in that game. But I appreciate the bleacher features that pop up from time to time.
For Love of the Game is also always on MLB Network.
Yep. Let's see. Speaking of old baseball movies, Major League 2 was randomly on True TV the other night. So I watched the first 30 minutes of it. I love it. So yes, Mr. 3000, mixed reviews from the critics. Rotten Tomatoes, 55% of the reviews are positive, average rating of 5.8 out of 10. The website's consensus reads, and this is coming, I'm reading a Rotten Tomatoes review on Wikipedia for those interested. Bernie Mac demonstrates he can play the game even if the movie's a few innings short of a complete game. Yeah, so there you go.
you know, who is going to play a complete game tomorrow? Doug McDaniel.
Boom. That's Drew Galloway. I'm Mason Both. We'll be live after the Cats and the Pokes tomorrow from Bramlage Coliseum. Full coverage of K-State basketball over at kstateonline.com and on 3 right now. And also plenty of football stuff going on as well. So we're out of here. Great mic drop by Drew to end it, tying this thing together. That's why he is also a pro. He likes to give me credit. I'm giving him credit. But I take all that credit away if he doesn't watch Mr. 3000 tonight. So I want a movie report on that tomorrow by tip-off of the Cats and Pokes at a very perfectly scheduled 7 o'clock Central time. None of this West Coast bullcrap that the Big 12 is throwing on us now.